good technology leadership in political organizations has to, number one, be a good technologist, but number two, understand how politics works and how to get things done in complicated organizations with lots of stakeholders. I'm not a huge fan of a kind of prerequisite for political technology leadership positions to come from Silicon Valley.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Mike Conlow has built an excellent career at the intersection of democratic politics and technology. He took his background in economics and his database skills to the DNC in 2006, helping them on the voter file and with micro-targeting. He landed in important roles on both Obama presidential campaigns. He also served a second tour at the DNC as their deputy CTO. Mike now runs the technology consulting practice on the agency side of Blue State Digital, a progressive technology and consulting firm with its roots in the technology leadership of the Dean campaign in 2004. So after a quick word from our sponsor, a very good interview from Mike Conlow of Blue State Digital.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. My name is Mike Conlow. I currently work for Blue State Digital, where I run our technology consulting and have a long background in democratic technology and politics. Was on both Obama campaigns, was at the DNC twice, so have been in this world for a long time.
Yeah, and you have a pretty enviable career in this world.
Thank you.
Go back a little bit. Where'd you grow up and where'd you go to college? What was the background that you started with?
Yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia. I'm still a very proud Philadelphia person, although I don't get back there as much as I would like. I went to college at UMass and was an economics person. And so my degree is in economics. My first job out of college was at the Federal Reserve Bank in Philadelphia.
Doing that, did you do a lot of like statistics and modeling and stuff?
Yeah, the job was split into two parts. Half of it was economic policy, the open market committee meetings and briefings for that. And the other half was economic research, first staff economists at the Federal Reserve. And I actually liked the policy part the best. And you weren't supposed to like that. You were supposed to like doing the research and you were supposed to want to be a PhD economist. And that was kind of the track that I was on. I was starting to find that wasn't really for me, and that partially I enjoyed the policy side of economics, and partially I was starting to get exposed to local politics in Philadelphia, so it kind of grew away from me, the PhD in economics track.
Did you grow up in a political family?
I did. My parents don't work in politics, but they certainly politics was always part of our family.
And so you make this transition, I think, in April of 2006 or something like that, over to the DNC. Right. How did that come about?
I was working at the Fed, as I said, and I was getting involved in local races. I helped out on Patrick Murphy's. It was the 8th district in Pennsylvania. He was running for Congress, and he won. And I was always kind of the best tech person that was volunteering on these races. And so started to get exposed to voter files and that kind of thing. And at the same time, I had this really what I felt was a horrible project at the Federal Reserve where I had to rank people by the quality of the economic journals that they were writing in, and the number of co-authors would be a deduction in the points that they received. And I worked this all up in Microsoft Access. And my boss at the time told me that she couldn't understand what this access thing was, and I had to do it in Excel. And not only did I not like the idea of this project of ranking these people, but I also didn't like being told that my preferred technical solution to it wouldn't work. And it was at that point, combined with the local politics, that I kind of badgered my way into the DNC. Ben Self was the technology director at the time, and I just chased him down until he gave me a job. And it started off as processing voter files, but it was the dawn of the micro-targeting era. And so I kind of worked my way out of processing voter files and into what we now call analytics.
Maybe there's a lesson for people in this notion of badgering your way into a job. Can you describe that a little bit more?
I had never met him. You know, it was via email and phone calls. I just kind of chased him. I hope I wasn't overbearing about it. I guess I don't think I was, considering they eventually gave me a job. But I would send him kind of samples of my work every now and again over a period of months. And so I was doing a lot of mapping work. And to do good mapping work, you needed to have good data. And so I was getting better and better at SQL to do kind of, you know, precinct aggregates that I was going to then put on a map. And so I would send Ben and then eventually Josh Hendler, who was the director of engineering at the time, just kind of samples of this work. And they didn't quite know where to fit me for a while. I was doing all this mapping work. But eventually we kind of reached an agreement that as long as I would spend a bunch of time processing voter files, that's what they really had a need for, and that they would give me a job doing that, and I could spend some kind of extra time on mapping or analytics or other things.
And so sometimes it makes a lot of sense to get into a place you want to be in by hook or by crook and prove yourself and then find your way to what you want to do.
Yeah.
And both Ben and Josh have been guests on the podcast and have great careers in the space and are good people to work with, I think, and learn from.
Yeah, both of them are.
Tell me a little bit about that stint at the DNC. What did you learn there about sort of technology and national Democrats?
It was a very exciting time, kind of looking back on it. We built what I would call the first real national voter file, the first database, single database that had every voter in the country in it. At the same time, we signed the national van contract that's now Vote Builder. And at the same time, like I said, micro-targeting was really taking off. And so the analyst group, the kind of precursor to the Analyst Institute, was really six of us or seven of us sitting around the table, Judith Freeman and Taryn and Dan Castleman and Keith Goodman and a very few others who were really at the beginning of political micro-targeting. And all those things were happening at the same time. It was an exciting time, especially looking back on it, to be at the DNC and be part of that. And from there, one of the things that I'm particularly proud of is we started to do fundraising modeling off the voter file. And after the election in 2006, starting to build models on who would respond to a piece of direct mail, who it was not an existing DNC donor. That was a lot of fun to work on.
How well did it work?
It worked extremely well. And that prospecting, because you don't have to rent a list from another organization or you don't have to buy a list from somebody else to put in the mail, you own the data. It's a voter file. It was a big part of the direct mail program through the Obama campaign in 2008, and was different new incarnations of it were a big part of the prospecting mail program through Obama 2012. But the first times we were doing it were in 2007. And, you know, we sent a sample to 300,000 registered Democratic primary voters between the ages of 55 and 85. And at 30 cents or 35 cents per piece of mail and 300,000 pieces of mail, that was a pretty big expenditure that I was responsible for. And I was awfully nervous at the time, being as young as I was, that nobody's going to respond to this piece of mail and we will just have wasted $100,000 or so. But it turned out a lot better than that.
Sounds like it didn't, because you kept doing it, right?
Right.
For people who don't know the term, what is political micro-targeting?
Political micro-targeting is using statistics to try to improve the quality
of a universe. And so to try to predict something. And so in the case of fundraising, we're trying to predict the likelihood that you're going to write a check and put it in the envelope and send it back to us. The more well-known versions are try to predict the likelihood that you're going to show up and vote in an election, or the likelihood that if you vote, you're going to vote for our candidate. And if you take the electorate overall, is 50% likely to vote for your candidate. But then as we add information about you, we can raise that number and be more sure who you are. And a lot of the data that is used to do this is fairly simple. There's a lot of mythology around what kind of car you buy or what kind of magazines you read, but really the most predictive data for any of this, fundraising or support or turnout, is the very basic stuff about you, your age, where you live, how often you've voted in the past, things like that that are really accessible with the basic voter file.
And are these sort of regression models, or what kind of econometric or statistical tools are you using?
Well, in 2006 and 2007, Hal Malchow had written a couple of books on this, and he was really one of the very first to do this, and was very generous with his time with me way back then, and I'm still grateful for that. What he was doing at the time was this tree analysis called CHADE. It's a chi-squared method that is not used very much anymore. It doesn't give you a lot of granularity in the predictions. One of the advances that we made, I guess it was 2007 when we started doing the fundraising analysis, was starting to use logistic regressions for these analytics. And that gives you a probability between 0 and 1 that a person is going to be in your target group. And so our target group for fundraising would have been people who responded to our sample of mail. And for a support model, that would be people who said in a survey that they're going to support your candidate. And for turnout models, you use a previous election as a kind of best guess, and you predict 0 to 1 whether that person is going to vote in that election.
So you kind of built a reputation for being at the forefront of this at the DNC. How do you end up at the first Obama campaign?
I kind of tried to read too much into the tea leaves. The DNC at the time was a Howard Dean place. And in 2007, it looked very much like Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee. And I went to work briefly for a direct mail firm that did the DNC's direct mail and did Hillary's direct mail. And I thought, this will be a great place when Hillary Clinton wins the nomination. And is a lesson that I've learned and tried to take to heart over the years is that you shouldn't be too calculating about these things. And obviously Obama won the primary, and that direct mail firm was not at the center of the universe. I was lucky enough that Michael Slaby gave me a job on the 2008 Obama campaign once the general election started, even though there were so many people who were true Obama diehards from the very beginning.
I did talk to Michael also earlier on the podcast. What was it like working with him?
It was great. He has a great kind of vision for what technology can be in these campaigns. The mix between the politics of a big campaign and high stakes and very fast moving and what technology can bring to it is a very hard balance to strike. And he set us up well to bring technology to these campaigns that they're a little bit reluctant, frankly. A lot of stakeholders who just want their thing done kind of right now. And the management of all those different stakeholders is really hard. And he helped that through both campaigns.
That's your first presidential, I take it. What was it like? It's a historically significant event to be in the middle of, right?
I don't think you really realize that at the time. I remember late nights, and I would watch the Yes We Can video on repeat, trying to psych myself up when it gets hard. But that campaign, I think there was only a very brief moment where we were down in the polls. So overall, that was an awfully easy campaign, but still they're grinding. And so it was my first, and you move to Chicago, but you don't actually see any of the city because you're working day and night. So they are a grind, but then you look back at them in terms of how historic it was, and also at a personal level, how much you kind of advance all of these jobs, the DNC and the campaigns, how much responsibility young people are given in these organizations, and how much knowledge you can pick up in a very, very brief period of time.
When you think back about that campaign, is there a memory or two that sits high on your list about how you think about it?
Definitely Grant Park on election night, for sure. They took all of us in the staff buses down to Grant Park at the last moment when they called Ohio. It was tremendous. That was really the pinnacle for me, was that Grant Park night in 2008.
I'm glad we won that one. What after that, you went back to a direct mail firm, or is that the same one that you were on before?
It was the same one as I was at before, but I was only there a very few number of months as the DNC was kind of getting set up in the Obama era before I went back to the DNC. So I just kind of landed back at that firm while the DNC was being kind of reconfigured.
But you go back to the DNC and now you're deputy director of technology. You've kind of moved up.
Right.
What was different then, and what were your responsibilities?
I touched a lot of what we did. I was involved in the small role that the DNC played in redistricting in 2010. Anyone who works in technology at the DNC will always be involved in the voter file and the national data warehouse. We had an engineering team working on web applications for the first time that I know of, building tools to help you look up where to vote and how to register, and those kind of things. And even a little bit involved in kind of IT and infrastructure stuff. I got to touch kind of all the pieces of DNC technology in that role.
People give mixed reviews about the DNC as a place to work. How was it for you?
I loved it. I loved it. It's just the amount of impact that you can make and still kind of relatively young and new in your career. You just get access to so much different responsibility. I had also kind of by this time started to work a lot with the finance teams and on donation processing. And so you get access to all of that. And you are working with a national database of voters, and you are involved at least a little bit in redistricting. And so the exposure to all kinds of different things is really, really, you can't match that in any other career, I think, or any other position in the world. And so is the DNC sometimes a little too bureaucratic? Sure. But I had a tremendous amount of fun in that role. I think probably that role was the most fun that I've ever had in a job, just because of the amount of different things that you get to work on.
Do you have any view into the recent DNC on technology? Do you have any opinions about how they're doing or their leadership there?
It seems to have recently that we think that leadership in technology should come from Silicon Valley, and that there's this kind of implication there that people who work in politics aren't good technologists. I take pretty big offense to that. I think that that's pretty wrongheaded. And I think that good technology leadership in political organizations has to both, number one, be good technologists, but number two, understand how politics works and how to get things done in complicated organizations with lots of stakeholders. I'm not a huge fan of a kind of prerequisite for political technology leadership positions to come from Silicon Valley.
It sounds like you're kind of implicitly talking about Rafi Krikorian, who's outgoing from the CTO role there. Do you have any sense of how he did?
I've interacted a decent amount with Rafi recently, and I think he learned a lot. I didn't interact with him very much at the beginning of his tenure, when the reviews of him and things were being written about him in Politico and that kind of thing. And so I suspect he had a rocky entry. It seems that way. It does seem that he has picked up a lot about politics along the way. But I'm not just talking about Rafi. I think there's a lot of this has happened in a lot of cases recently. And so it's not just about Rafi.
It happens in presidential campaigns too sometimes, where
definitely
there's really mixed opinions out there about whether you should bring in like a Harper Reid or a, you know, like a CTO from business, or like they did on the Hillary campaign, or whether you should hire someone who's been in the space, the political technology space, and kind of gets its complexity. If you were in a position to make that hire for an important presidential campaign that you cared about, where would you look?
There are obviously hard roles to fill, but I would be trying to find someone who understands the political complexity, but also understands how to make good, creative technology decisions. You need to find both. You need to try and find good technologists who also have worked in the political space and know how to get things done. And so, for instance, I would hope that the next DNC CTO knows what the 2020 nominee is going to need out of technology and can set the DNC up to be in a position to provide that technology for the nominee. And in an open primary like this, where all the candidates are going to, they have to focus on winning the nomination, there's going to be very, very little time to think about what their technology will be like. If they do win the nomination, the DNC has to be providing that technology infrastructure. And I would think that the next DNC CTO should be somebody who can provide that infrastructure on day one to the nominee.
Is that something you would ever go back and do, or are you well past that in your career at this point?
I don't know. I never rule anything out. I don't see it, but I wouldn't ever rule anything out.
I assume you've been tracking the, I don't know, some people call the fourth data war, some efforts to build new voter file outside of the party, or tools for connecting different parts of the progressive space on data. What do you see happening there? And are you optimistic about where things might go?
Yeah, I am optimistic. I think that where the state parties and the DNC landed on a data exchange is really necessary. As far as I can tell, the Republicans really do have a way of sharing data between soft side entities and hard side entities that are already set up. And we don't have anything like that. Very little of that type of sharing happens. Where the DNC and the state parties landed on a data exchange to facilitate that kind of sharing really fills a gap that we have. And so I'm very optimistic. A little bit of drama along the way, but that it landed in a good place that really is going to add value.
What was different for you about Obama 2012 versus Obama 08?
Obama 08 really didn't start until June of 2008, when Obama won the primary and now had to focus on the general, certainly not for me, whereas Obama 2012 started very, very early, depending on how you want to define it, officially in April of 2011, but really long before that. And so there was a real engineering team and real engineering projects, and we took on a lot. It was really night and day between the two in terms of the technology and the campaign overall.
One of the things that you guys built over there was something called Narwhal. What was that?
Narwhal was a kind of integration layer. It was a way to take in data from all these different systems and send data back out to any other system that needs the data. And it was also the foundation for all of the web applications that we built. And so the big one being Dashboard, which was the groups tool and the call tool and all the other kind of online tools kind of rolled into this one application called Dashboard, which had Narwhal as its database.
For people who are not technologists but are interested in politics and interested in presidential campaigns, how can campaigns be more effective if they have better technology behind them? What's the concrete effect of doing this well versus screwing it up?
The effect of doing it well is that you can make your organizers a lot more powerful if they have good tools to help them. If someone has a tool that they can easily enter data about someone they know, there's a lot of work now being done in what's being called the relational organizing space. But how do we help people
first tell the campaign about their relationships with friends and family and neighbors and what those people think about politics, and then also help that person convince their neighbors and their friends on their political positions. And so there's a lot of work being done in that space. And so technology should help people, should facilitate that type of interaction.
It seems like for presidential campaigns on our side that everybody in our primary is probably re-engineering their own sort of stack of tools, and none of them look exactly the same. And probably very few of them are fully capable of a general election, as you sort of alluded to earlier. How would you advise a CTO at one of the primary contenders to pull together the best tools in the short amount of time that they can?
I think it's incredible the amount of innovation and new tools that came out of the midterms last cycle. There are just great new tools on events and on relational organizing. There's dozens of them. All of them have a good idea and passionate people working on them. I do have a concern about whether these tools are ready for a general election. And I think it is different. The midterms last cycle were different. There was a lot more coordination and cooperation, and we were all kind of on the same page. And we're entering a different world now where it's a presidential primary and everybody kind of retreats to their corners and isn't as interested in kind of sharing their volunteers and sharing their data. And then we'll enter another different world where there's one big campaign, which is the presidential. We all need to help these platforms meet those needs. But I do think that there's a lot of great ideas there and a lot of great technology there. And I think that the primary campaign should be very careful about building custom tools. Maybe you need to. There's a very poor track record in political technology of being able to make those tools, custom tools, survive after these campaigns end. Even with planning and thought and resources like we had on the Obama campaigns, Narwhal and Dashboard don't exist anymore. Very little, if any, of the Hillary 2016 technology still exists anymore. So it's very, very difficult to have technology that comes out of a campaign live on past the end of the campaign. There's a ton of work that goes into custom technology. And so I think the primary campaigns have to be very, very careful and choose exactly the right custom technology to take on versus what they can find from a vendor who is very passionate, is going to work with them and make the tool into what they want without having to do it as a custom application and lose all of the development at the end of the campaign.
When you look at the current contenders for 2020, do you think some have an advantage in their technology base over others, and who?
I don't think so. I think that because of all of these vendors that are out there and all of these tools want to work with as many campaigns as they can sign up, I think that there's a relatively equal access to those tools between all the campaigns. And so I don't know that any of the campaigns has a particular leg up from my vantage point. Do you feel differently?
It's my guess that someone like Sanders, who already ran and had a lot of technologists and kind of had some things in their own stack, has an advantage over someone who is not very funded and may not have yet technologists in place or the knowledge. So I suspect there's a big difference, but I'm not close enough to anybody to really know.
That could be. There was a lot of enthusiasm and good ideas that came out of Beto's run in Texas.
I mean, there's a big advantage to having just run or run recently and sort of continued on a stack of political technology versus having to put that in place in a hurry, even if it exists out there.
Yep.
Technology and analytics and data and kind of the tactics of a campaign might be worth something and might be worth a winning margin, but usually it's candidate skills and position taking and message and charisma and timing and many other things that make the big difference. Do you ever wish that you were in a different part of the campaign, or how do you think about that that difference between the tactics and the strategy of a big campaign?
It's definitely important to remember that those kind of externalities do play a huge role. And just because we were in technology on Obama 2012 doesn't mean that necessarily that we are all technology geniuses and that we could do no wrong and everything was perfect. And by the same token, there's a lot of great technology and ideas that come out of losing campaigns. We're always too quick to not give enough credit to campaigns that don't win and a little too much credit to campaigns that do win. So I think that that's always a factor. I don't ever want to work in some other part of the campaign because technology supports all those other parts of the campaign. And most of those factors that you're talking about, the kind of Obama factor, maybe Obama made one or two mistakes himself across two presidential campaigns, but you know, working in some other department on the campaign doesn't mean that you're more responsible for the win than anything else. But I do agree that certain candidates like Barack Obama are just special in that way. But that's a property of him, not a property of some other department on the campaign that is creating that.
Some people have made the argument that like the Beto campaign, that the tactics drove the strategy in some ways, that the way that they could campaign became the way they did campaign. And, you know, do you see it that way?
I wasn't particularly close to the Beto campaign. I do think that more than kind of technical achievements, I think they kind of let the technology kind of get out of the way and kind of flow its own direction and didn't try to control it too much in a kind of similar way to what it feels like the rest of the campaign was doing. And I think there's a lesson there is that, you know, if you set up Slack and let people contribute what they can and not try to constrain it too much, that could really work in some situations.
After the 2012 campaign, you went to Everytown for gun safety?
I did consulting, and Everytown for Gun Safety was one of my larger projects. But I was also kind of helping out Amnesty International and a couple other groups.
Just to talk about Everytown, which I don't know too well, how does that fit into the progressive ecosystem, that enterprise?
At the time, Everytown for Gun Safety didn't exist. They were Mayors Against Illegal Guns, and I was part of helping them grow from a very small organization of mayors into a national advocacy group on gun safety. I think they play, and gun safety groups in general play a huge role, partly because of what the NRA has put together, but also because of important issues like that should have a voice and have funding and have a seat at the table. It was a wake-up call for me when the Sandy Hook shooting happened right after the election in 2012. And then again, when the Manchin Toomey background check bill failed, and as we've continued to make no meaningful progress on gun legislation. And so I think that there is a really important role for important issues like that to have a seat at the table. And Everytown is providing that.
What did you learn from your time consulting with them and the other groups?
How hard it is in that role, I guess. You can be well-funded, as Everytown is, and have access to any kind of tool, or you can build anything that is a good idea, is going to get funding. It's not kind of resource constrained in the same way that a political party is, and still it's still so hard to make progress.
Are you talking about because the other side has us outmatched in that area?
I guess that's part of it. I don't know why you can't get enough votes in the U.S. Senate to pass universal background checks. I guess that comes down to a handful of senators in a handful of states. And so, yeah, I think the funding on the other side is definitely a big part of that.
You are now at Blue State Digital, which was founded by Ben Self and several other people who you met at the DNC. How did you end up at Blue State and how do you like it?
Blue State is a great fit for me. And so I was a client of Blue State for a long time, obviously, between the DNC and the Obama campaigns. But now I work for Blue State's agency side, which helps organizations, especially in my role, kind of make big technology transitions. When an organization really wants to step up their digital game and their technology that supports that, they'll come to us for help doing that. And so the same thing that was so interesting to me about the DNC getting to work on a lot of different things is also great about Blue State, which is we have a great mix of clients working on lots of different problems, and they're coming to us when they have a big challenge and they need help with the technology to solve that. And so I get to work on things like I did a project recently for New York City that is a tool that lets you put in some information about yourself and your household and tells you what government programs you might be eligible for that you didn't know about, which is a great project to work on. Or we have a big platform for the Sierra Club, which helps people take action on environmental issues. And so I get to work on a great mix of clients on who are trying to do big things. And so it's a great fit for me.
And are those sort of custom developments, or do they fit on top of the main Blue State products?
Totally separate from the Blue State Digital Tools. I have very little interaction with the Blue State Digital Tools software product. Occasionally, there will be what we call an agency client who is also a BSD Tools client, and there's some kind of integration between the two. I lead our agency technology, which is working on custom technology platforms for these clients. And sometimes they are a WordPress or a Drupal website with a CMS, and sometimes they are a totally custom built platform. But no, there's no interconnectedness with the Blue State Tools software product.
That New York City tool that you mentioned sounds really interesting and useful. I mean, it sounds like something that ought to be productized and used in cities across the country, and maybe by the federal government and state governments. Do you think about that?
Definitely. And the New York City team that is continuing to maintain that has that exact vision. But the API that we built that takes in this information and spits back out your eligibility for these programs is built with the extensibility in mind for other front ends to be able to use that API down the road. And so I hope in the not too distant future that API is open sourced. I think that's the plan of New York City and documented, and that if someone wanted to write a interface that was SMS based, like a bot or a Facebook Messenger bot or whatever, that took a user through a prompt asking them about their income and the number of dependents that they have and the amount that they spend on their heating bill and those type of things that we need to make the eligibility decision, that they could write that as a SMS interaction or as a Facebook Messenger bot or as a different front end to it. Yeah, that's exactly the idea behind that. It's called Access NYC is the project. That's exactly the goal of it.
Do you know if there is a federal tool like that?
Not that I know of.
So it sure seems like there must be a real use for people out there to find out what programs they could qualify that they're probably not knowing about, particularly poor people, or I don't know, even business people who have access to different programs. So yeah, I'm glad you're working on things like that. What's another highlight for you at Blue State?
It's really the client mix. It's the Sierra Clubs and New York City government, and we're working with the state of California now on a similar program that helps people find ways to buy clean vehicles. It's really the client mix for me.
Are you aware on the BSD Tools side, do many of the current Democratic presidential campaigns use them?
I'm not the right person to ask that, unfortunately, because I'm so disconnected from the BSD Tools software as a service platform. So I'm really not the right person to answer that, unfortunately.
Are you going to personally be involved in any of the presidentials?
Yeah, Blue State is helping out the Elizabeth Warren campaign, and so I get to help out with the Elizabeth Warren campaign, helping them set up their technology. I get to be at least a little bit involved so far.
Does that mean sort of like if you're a consultant to the Warren campaign and you know what's going on there, you wouldn't then be in a position to talk to other presidentials?
That's right. I feel like I'm too involved in the Warren campaign to feel comfortable advising other campaigns on strategy, on technology strategy. And I think it has happened. I'm not involved if other campaigns come to Blue State asking for help. And so we have other teams that would work on other campaigns.
Do you happen to be involved with Warren because she's your preference as a candidate?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I think I would be involved anyway, but I am a economic person. Elizabeth Warren's message on equal opportunity is what I think that every Democrat should be talking about and running on. And so I'm very happy to be part of this campaign. I think she would be fantastic. And I think she is leading with policy, which is refreshing. Seems like most people think she's right on most issues. And so it's exciting to be part of.
How do you think that campaign's doing so far?
It's a very crowded primary. I think it's too early to tell.
Taking one step back from that, what do you think the characteristics are of a nominee that we want who can win this one?
I think that it kind of breaks down into two groups of people. I think there's people who want the best chance to beat Donald Trump, who think that the best candidate is the one who polls best in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. And then there's another group of people who think that the person with the best chance to beat Donald Trump is the one with the most conviction and the best policy and the one who's going to win over the American public because of their passion and their conviction and their issue positions. And the people that I talk to kind of mostly break down into one of those two camps. I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer. I am a little bit concerned that we are rolling into another kind of 2016 thing where last time we had this kind of same dynamic. And so I'm a little bit worried that we're rolling into that again and that the field is kind of divide up on those two sides. It seems a little bit like that's happening.
Well, I guess my view is we need both types voting for whoever our nominee is.
Right.
Having a campaign that allows us to unify at the end is pretty important.
Absolutely agree. And so I hope that all of these candidates that we settle on one that everybody can get behind. Because I do think that no matter what you think the best approach is to beating Donald Trump, I think it is universally agreed that he needs to be defeated. And so I would think that the Democratic Party is going to coalesce around whoever the nominee is.
Where do you want to take your career? You're pretty happy where you are, it sounds like, mm-hmm. but you're still a young man, relatively mm-hmm. speaking. Where would you like to go over the long run?
I would love to continue to be a technology generalist and get to work on a lot of different parts of technology. I've been lucky in that I kind of started out as kind of a data and analytics person, and I've grown into much more of a technology / web / application type person. But I'm excited about kind of learning new things. For me, it's going to be roles and opportunities in my career that give me access to a new challenge and a new problem. I really love the projects that expose me to something new. I'm very curious about kind of the online ad space and the black boxes that are set up in the online ad world and how cookies and tracking pixels are used to surface ads and that kind of thing. And so my career will always be about kind of what else can I pick up and learn that I don't know already.
Have you ever given thought to starting your own enterprise?
Occasionally, I would want a really good idea. I haven't had the breakthrough idea that I'm passionate enough about to go out on my own and accept all the risk that entails. Maybe I'm too risk averse. If I have that great idea, maybe I would, but I haven't yet had that idea that I'm sure is going to be a winner.
When you look around at a lot of the innovations that came out of the midterms and other things that you must have eyeballs on from your role at Blue State, what stands out for you in progressive political technology that is really useful at the moment?
There's one thing that stands out that I don't think is being handled particularly well, which is I don't think we do a terribly good job of understanding who you are as a supporter beyond your voter file record and what you put into an online form. We do a very good job at collecting your email address lots of different times, but I don't think we do a terribly good job at thinking about who you are beyond that. Like I would love to see campaigns know the fact that if you're clicking only on Twitter shares, that you are a Twitter person and that we should surface more Twitter content to you because you are more likely to share it. And the same thing with Facebook. Or if you're coming to a certain issue page, if you have expressed a preference for a certain type of issue, that we are thinking about you that way and that we're then using that information to tailor the content stream that you're seeing, both on the website and in the email program. Our websites are too kind of generic and try to play to all audiences, and the email programs as well are just kind of blast, blast, blast. And so I think that there's a real kind of need and opportunity to be smarter about what we know about people and then tailoring the content to what that person is trying to do. That's a real kind of opportunity that I don't think is very well covered. And in terms of what kind of is well covered, there's been a lot of work in online events space. I think there's more and more work into these relational tools.
Who are you thinking of in events, for example?
Mobilize America gets rave reviews from everyone who uses it. Control Shift has a great product also. There's a couple of options out there now on those kinds of tools. NGP Van has a distributed events tool that just rolled out. And so there's been a number of kind of new entrants into this distributed organizing house party event tools recently.
I think some of the new funders in the space, the higher grounds and so on, are really helping to seed a bunch of experiments or to help push them along.
Yeah, that is excellent. It's very hard. Everyone says that this politics is big money and all this kind of stuff, but it's not easy. I don't imagine it's easy to be a political tech startup. Campaigns do not want to pay a lot of money for these tools, but technology is expensive to build. And so I've never had that role, but I don't imagine that the economics of being a political tech startup with a small slice of the overall picture like events or like distributed organizing tools is particularly easy to get started. And so some kind of patient capital to help them along the way, I think, is very needed.
Yeah, most of them, unfortunately, don't make it. Do you pay attention to the Republican side and the sort of technology base that they have? And do you have any sense of, if you do, how it compares?
Just what I kind of read in the press, I'm not sure that I have a better sense than anyone else. I was interested, obviously, that they're trying to mimic ActBlue. We're trying to mimic them on sharing data between soft side and hard side, but I'm not sure I have a better sense than anyone else on where they are.
They did make their internet communicating guy the head of the campaign.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's going to be an awful lot of centralized attention to communicating kind of in a micro-targeted way, I imagine, by ads. Do you think we're in a position to combat that?
Not just yet. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the numbers that everyone is putting out about how much more they are spending already on Facebook ads than the entire Democratic field combined. That's kind of terrifying. You don't see any of that in your Facebook feed because, you know, we're not exposed. We're not in their target groups. But the amount of kind of messaging reinforcement that they can do with big money on Facebook is going to have serious implications for the general election. And so we have this kind of long running debate within the Democratic Party about what the right balance is between TV money and online ad money. And so maybe the amount that Trump is spending on Facebook is going to help the nominee allocate in a similar way to try and match what Trump is going to do in online spending.
Bloomberg is a big part of every town that you work for. And I had heard that he is building a database and tools for the nominee. What do you know about that, if anything?
I don't know anything more than what is in the press. I'm not on the inside of that. I would just say that we have a national database of voters. We put a lot of time and effort and money into cleaning up that data and standardizing it and appending more data to it.
and giving campaigns an interface to it and doing analytics off of it. We've kind of maxed out, or at the very least, the marginal gains of increased investment in those areas is not very high. And so I would hope that whatever the plan is on that Bloomberg data operation is breaking new ground, is doing something that is not already being done. And so if folks like Michael Bloomberg or like Reid Hoffman or anyone else are putting more money into this ecosystem, let's put it into things that are not being done and not things that are being done quite well, which in my view, core voter file data and analytics is being done well.
Is there a question that I should have asked you that I failed to?
No, I don't think so. We've covered a lot of ground.
Well, it's been a great honor to talk to you today. Anything else you want to say?
No, I don't think so. Thank you for the conversation.
That was Mike Conlow of Blue State Digital. He's at bluestatedigital.com. I'm glad to hear that Blue State Digital's agency side is out there doing good work. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.